Hi. Happy Mother's Day if you're a mother. My mum is a mother. My mum listens to this podcast, so she'd be listening right now. So, hi, Mum. Happy Mother's Day. And also, it's Karen's, my wife's, first Mother's Day. So happy Mother's Day. You're doing an incredible job. Oh. Thanks for letting me do this, Pete and KXC. I'm Neil. I've been part of KXC from the start, there or thereabouts. I am a missionary full-time. I work for London City Mission, and I'm part of a small team, and we focus our kind of efforts and energy on the local street population and marginalised community. And we partner with a few churches to run a few projects, drop-ins, and we do street outreach in the area, and we do visits to hostels and hospitals of contacts that we know that perhaps are in there. And we also as a team do prison ministry with Cara, so I'm glad that you did that little announcement because it ties in. Yes, it's a privilege. I love it. I love what I do. And there's one man who's purely responsible for my vocation. It's not St. Francis of Assisi. It's not Nicky Gumbel. It's not even Pete Hughes. It is this man, George Best. It must have been October 2008. It was Halloween night, and I was off to a party, a dead famous party. So the idea is that you go as someone who is famous and is dead. I put on a red jumper with the number 7 on the back and white shorts and went as George Best. And I know what you're thinking. There's a little bit of resemblance, but the hair is not quite right. What was I thinking? So before we go any further, we need to have a look at the cultural context of this story. As Pete would say, the world behind the text. George Best in Northern Ireland was and still is a cultural icon. The word legend doesn't even begin to come close to doing justice. Anyway, I'm making my way into Belfast city centre, Halloween night, busy night, right? And I am nothing short of worshipped. Taxi men are beeping their horn, shouting out the window. Lads out on the raz are literally running and hugging me. And there's actually one woman who's really upset, thought I was being very disrespectful. So anyway, I made it to the venue, I made it to the club, and it was sold out, so I couldn't go. Feeling rejected and, not wanting just to go home, I thought, I'll go to the chippy and get a sausage supper. And as I was waiting for my order in the chip shop burst into song. They were singing, Georgie, Georgie, they call you the Belfast boy. And it was initiated by two rough sleepers who saw George Best walk into a chip shop. So they followed me into the chip shop and started singing. It was fun. So when I got my order, when I got my chips, I crossed the road and sat with them and, ate with them and stayed out for hours and hours, chatting, having so much fun. They started to open up a lot about their pasts and their stories and their failures, and it was really sad. That night was a huge eye-opener for me. And by the way, I did absolutely everything you shouldn't do that night, a safeguarding nightmare. I was on my own. I had a beer with them. I stayed out pretty much all night, only in a Retro United strip. And then I gave them 20 quid as I left. If you want to do any sort of homeless ministry, use that as an example of what not to do. Remember that. Anyway, all that to say, something began for me that night. a fascination and an interest, as well as a deep concern and sadness for the straight community. So that little kind of tale kick-started my journey with spending time with the marginalized, and I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. But I'm not wanting to talk explicitly about homeless ministry this morning. It might mean that for some, but what I want to talk about is the local other, which is a phrase coined by a guy, Benjamin Bloor, from the Nomad podcast. And it's his observation that for Christians today, it's common to genuinely care for others, but by supporting charities and organizations and projects, which is all really, really good and really essential. But he says that there's a less removed, much more immediate other, often right in front of us, the local other, which is more personal. So instead of the poor, the elderly, the incarcerated, it becomes about the person, that elderly man or woman, that particular prisoner, that young mum struggling with debt. And it's with this in mind where the need becomes relationship rather than charity. And I feel like this kind of other, you know, this is what we see Jesus concerned about, the neighbor, the local other. But I do want to say this, though, and it's so obvious with the announcements as well, with prison ministry and with Choices and so many other things. There's so many in KXC entering into the most genuine and authentic relationships with the local other. It's just often that, you know, they're the quiet ones and you don't hear a lot about it. And also, to be honest, it can be really difficult to communicate when sometimes progress or fruit seems very slow. There are two guys in KXC who actually have been incredible at befriending and mentoring a guy who has multiple issues as a result of trauma and mistreatment. And they keep in touch with him and they listen to him. They take him out for dinner. They've supported him through a legal case as well. And it's incredible. It's inspiring to see them love him in a very direct and local and consistent way. Richard Beck, a psychologist and a blogger, talks about the process in his personal journey of faith, and I think it's similar for many of us. He talks about over time questioning and shaping his worldview, theologically, politically, and arriving at a place that seems to work for him, and then getting there and desiring the next level, wanting more. And he says this great line, he says, "Okay, I get that Jesus loves me, but now I need to work out how to love like him." And that really challenged me. So, shall we read the Bible? It's probably a good idea. It's church. Matthew 9, verse 9 to 13, the calling of Matthew, if you want to look it up. There's a nice little bit of iconography for you. Yeah, there we go. I like this, probably for the wrong reasons. If you look at it, the little boys at the bottom kind of like gathering together those little coins, do you see that? And then at the very, it's quite dark. Do you see how tiny the wee people are at the balcony at the very, very top? I think it's quite funny, but they're probably really significant, really profound things. But let's keep this image up and I'll read it and you can follow along on your phones if you want. As Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. "Follow me," he told him, and Matthew got up and followed him. While Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. When the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, "Why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners?" On hearing this, Jesus said, "It is not the healthy who needs a doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice, for I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners." From the get-go, the first thing Jesus sees Matthew, it's like the eighth word, he sees him. He takes notice of him. And we could probably just spend a lot of time on that. Jesus sees people we don't. Jesus is aware of those unnoticed. And there are so many layers going on in society, so many unseen layers. And I don't just mean, you know, just physically, but people's lives and stories beneath the surface. I met a guy last week from Central Eastern Europe, and he looked really well. He was incredibly intelligent. His English was amazing, and we had a really good chat. And as we spoke, he began to open up. And turns out he had driven to London, run out of money, insurance, and diesel, and is sleeping in his car by the M25, and had walked 4.5 hours in the snow into central London to look for work, had sold his iPad for 80 quid, which he had £20 left. The complications of his life were totally unseen, and it was overwhelming. But Jesus sees the unseen. Jesus is aware of those unnoticed. And this is slightly different, I suppose, because where Jesus sees Matthew is at the tax collector's booth. So there are no secrets to who Matthew is. In this case, who he is clearly on display. Tax collector, scum basically, doing deals with the occupying force, a traitor to Israel, getting filthy rich by shamelessly exploiting his own people. A man who is disliked by society, detested by society. And I find this hard, because this isn't Jesus loving the poor. This is Jesus loving the detestable. So first, he sees him. Then secondly, he calls him. And I think initially reading this, it sounds like a sort of disciplinary thing or something. Matthew, follow me. But understanding now a bit of the intensity of the rabbinic educational system and the honor it was to be chosen as a rabbi's disciple, it's clear that this is a radical act of acceptance and inclusion rather than correction. And that correction comes as a sort of inevitable result of acceptance. So first he sees him. Secondly, he calls him. And thirdly, he joins him. He has dinner at Matthew's house with lots of other people, also disliked by society. And this isn't a standalone incident. The story of Zacchaeus is very similar. Zacchaeus being a chief tax collector who also isn't poor but incredibly wealthy. And Jesus does the same three things. He notices Zacchaeus in a tree. He calls him out of it, and he joins with him at his house. So using language like missionary or mission will provoke many responses. It might really excite some people. Some of us might have grown up in churches or families where that's what you did. You supported overseas missionaries, or even a few of you maybe went on mission trips yourselves. And others will cringe a bit. It's not really my thing. It's not where I'm at. And fair enough, not only is it not very cool, but these words have many negative connotations as well. Christian mission hasn't always felt like that of God. Often intrusive, patronizing, and at its worst, destructive. But I really believe that mission, in its essence, is the vehicle that God will use to bring about restoration. Maybe we just need to frame it slightly differently and use different language. So the whole idea of mission is not only about a movement towards something, it's actually moving into something. Traditionally, the focus was often geographical, moving into a nation or a culture with a message, attempting to usher the goodness of the gospel into places and communities and people's lives. London is one of the most cosmopolitan, most ethnically diverse cities on the planet. So in a sense, you don't have to go anywhere. The world's nations and cultures have come here. And also, cities almost always have this tension of the richest in society and the poorest in society living on top of each other, like actually living on top of each other. The new apartment block across from ours. The bottom floor is a community centre. The middle is social housing. And at the top is like primo luxury apartments. And I feel like the phrase, the local other, blows apart the concept of only some being called to the mission field, to use Christian language. I think it's for us all. Because as long as we live in the city, there will always be the local other. It just means now maybe mission is not entering into places, but into stories and people's stories. So time for everyone is a major limiting factor. People have jobs. We don't have time to commit to a project. But what if it wasn't about devoting time to something, but rather someone, like literally one person? A bit like what Sophie's announcement was, so I'm glad she did that. And what if charitable volunteering or service to the poor was actually just having a mate? Okay, it might look very, very different to your other friendships, but essentially it meant just having one more friend that you care about. Having a cup of tea with someone who is elderly, homeless, on probation, or struggling with debt. A close friend of mine, we were out for a drink. Well, actually, I was on the peppermint teas. I'm off alcohol for Lent, bar Six Nation Days. I think that's fine. I don't think God minds either with the results. Anyway, he was telling me about a guy he has noticed in his community who lives in the high rises near his flat. And this man appears to have some mental health issues and a form of Tourette's, because as he walks the streets, he is yelling expletives all the time, which, you know, naturally for some is unsettling, so people cross the road or move out of the way quickly. But my friend is choosing not to. He instead intentionally walks towards and close to him. And the man does the total opposite. He quietly puts his head down and stops yelling. And my friend has this genuine interest in him as an individual, a curiosity and a desire to move towards as opposed to move away. He's noticed him and now wants to know him. And I feel like that's a good image for the church and mission. Like, there needs to be a new fascination, if I can use that word, like an interest and a deep desire to move into relationship with the local other, and a realization that we learn from these relationships, that we discover more of God in these friendships, and that it's in these friendships we usher in the goodness of Jesus and build his kingdom. To reference the metaphor, perhaps we, you know, the church, big C, need to move or need to avoid crossing the street because of behavior that slightly unsettles. So with mission, the good news is you don't have to go anywhere. And the second bit of good news is you don't have to quit your job. However, it does, I think, require stepping into something, entering into a level of chaos, people's lives and people's stories. I've mainly talked about mission, stepping towards or stepping into something and joining with, but we also want people to join with us, right? To be fully part of the church family, to belong. John Swinton is a professor in divinity at the University of Aberdeen, and he originally trained as a mental health nurse as well, incredible guy. Anyway, he talks about the difference between inclusion and belonging. He talks about inclusion being a sort of legal and social term. You know, you can't show discrimination, therefore everyone is welcome, everyone is included, which is great, but it's slightly different than belonging. Belonging has a spiritual weight to it. In order for someone to find belonging, they need to be loved. And as he puts it, to belong, you need to be missed. he says this: when you're part of a community, you can only be fully part of the community when you're no longer there and the community come and look for you. With inclusion, it doesn't really matter if you're there or if you're not. Belonging means it matters to be there. It slayed me when I heard that. What a challenge. As a team, you know, and it is our full-time kind of thing, but we're in contact with about 35, 40 people. And I'm not sure if I've ever kind of sat and given this a lot of thought about missing them. A few Sundays ago at the 4:30, Edie was starting to lose it, so I went out for a walk, and I was thinking about this. And instantly, a guy popped into my head who I hadn't seen for a few months and I was concerned about. And I thought, you know, yeah, I really miss him. Anyway, I walked back to the church and he was sitting right there. It's incredible. And he was looking really well. And I said to him, I've missed you. And I meant it because I just thought about it and I just thought about him. The thing is, though, I could do much better at actively looking for him and others like him when they're not about. So that was a huge challenge for me, and it's something that I'm going to think about often. To belong, you need to be missed. So I'll end with this, or as the pros say, coming into land. Robert Lipton, who wrote an excellent book called Toxic Charity, urges people to move away from a more traditional approach of doing for the poor into a doing with model. Moving away from a more traditional approach of doing for the poor into a doing with model, which changes just about everything. And I think this idea of entering in and joining with is at the very core of the gospel. It's at the center of what Christianity is. In Jesus, we see God entering into the chaos of this world. We don't have a God who remains at a safe, distant place, watching the world eat itself. Or as an incredible teacher at LCM called Alan Black once said to me, God doesn't wind up the clock of life and leave it just to tick along. Instead, we have a God who wraps himself up in human flesh and enters in, joins with us, and suffers with us. Henry Nouwen, a priest and a theologian, puts it beautifully when he writes this. I think I've got it. Thank you. Jesus' whole life and mission involve accepting powerlessness and revealing in this powerlessness the limitlessness of God's love. Here we see what compassion means. It is not a bending toward the underprivileged from a privileged position. It is not a reaching out from on high to those who are less fortunate below. It is not a gesture of sympathy or pity for those who fail to make it on the upward pull. On the contrary, compassion means going directly to those people and places where suffering is most acute and building a home there. And we know that that's the story in part, but it's not just about joining in suffering. You know, we hope that people experiencing suffering will also experience resurrection hope and new life in Jesus. But my point is, I feel as Christians, it requires this idea of entering into something, entering into people's stories and people's lives, but not empty-handed, with a hope and a light, the light of the world. So I admit all of that's not very practical. And instead of just listing everything that you can do, just know that there are so many opportunities in KXC to do this, you know. And it's amazing and it's life-giving. And if, you know, yeah, if it's on your heart, speak to John, speak to Karis, KXC's community engagement pastors, for more info. So, yeah, as I was praying about this, I felt like there was like three groups of people that yeah, we would love to pray for. And the first group was people who kind of responded to that first quote, or something happened in your heart. The quote, "I get that Jesus loves me, but now I need to work out how to love like him." Yeah, I'd love to pray for you if that spoke to you. The second one is more specific. If you want to grow in this and join with someone, not something, but join with someone, I would love to pray that the Spirit would lead you to a particular person. Like the Spirit would reveal the unseen to you, that there's someone out there in London now that will be your friend, that you will enter into a relationship with. So that would be a really, really amazing specific prayer for some. And then lastly, I was thinking this when I was praying about it. Maybe for those that have a level of fear with this as a concept, if there's fear stopping you in some way, and actually more specifically, if someone has kind of had a difficult or weird encounter, love to pray with you. If that's just kind of, you know, put a stop to your engagement with maybe the marginalized community. So I'd love to pray for that. So yeah, if any of those speak to you, love to pray for you. But thank you so much for listening.